Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name is David Reed, and joining me as ever is Mr. Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, I just realised I was wearing my sunglasses and my T-shirt, and I thought, well, we're not going to need those again this year.
No, it's over, isn't it? Done. No more sun.
I feel a bit down in the dumps.
Oh, really? Why? Just sort of...
Maybe it's a changing of the seasons.
Just low. I get seasonally affected, as they call it. When it's a gloomy day, I'm in a bad mood for seemingly no reason and go, hang on a second. It happens a lot.
Maybe you need to smoke some reefer, man.
Smoke the reefer! Chillax!
Yeah, chillax, man!
That's good advice. Have you thought about being a counsellor?
Well, no. I said to you earlier, I walk to the tube station and get the tube to near your house and walk here.
Yeah.
There are a lot of mental people out today. A disturbing amount of mental... As in, two out of every three people looked as though they would murder you.
Camden's getting a bit stranger. I noticed a guy... he was doing that thing that I haven't seen since... I don't think since the 80s. It only seems to be in American films. No, although, that's another story. But he was... When cars were stopping at the lights outside my flat, he was approaching them with a squeegee and a thing.
Oh, I've seen that.
And trying to do their windscreens for money. But he didn't have any water.
Oh, no. He,
and the next... that same afternoon, I just saw him on a bench with a big can of Scrumpy Jack. So he's just a bloke who I think has bought those two things, or stolen them, or bought them from the pound shop. But it's just theatre. He didn't have any water to actually clean windscreens
yeah.
with. It was just a sort of creative begging.
No one wants that. Someone clean your windscreen with those.
But at least it shows initiative if you've got no money. I mean... But there's been a sort of air of desperation in this area growing recently in the last few years.
In general, I mean, it's impossible for anyone to buy a house unless you're rich already.
Yeah.
I'm not going to start moaning about that again.
No, but it's true. I mean, London's pricing everyone but the top out and putting enormous pressure upon the bottom. But there you go. We're not here to talk about the social economic difficulties of living in modern day Britain.
That would be a good podcast.
It would be quite possibly a better one.
People in the history which will go, referring back to the October 2017 edition of Film Fandango. I'm just doing a footnote. I'm reading out what a footnote would be. There's nothing interesting in footnotes. No one ever reads footnotes.
That's true. We are here to talk about films. But before we do so, we should say we're sponsored by Her Film Project, who are an organisation that help promote diversity in films. So if you'd like to get involved or find out more about what they do, then go to herfilmproject.com and follow Her Film Project on Twitter for the latest updates.
Well, if you're one of the three mental people in Camden,
yeah,
they could all apply for this, probably get...
Oh, I don't know. Yes, I mean, the mentally ill certainly are a marginalised group, aren't they?
But you could argue that everyone is mentally ill to a certain extent.
You could argue it. I think psychiatrists would disagree with you. It's a spectrum, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it.
There's definitely a spectrum. Marek's been to the cinema this week.
I went to see a film I was very much looking forward to, which I read a series of 5-star reviews saying it's one of the greatest horror films ever.
Right.
And then a friend said to me, oh... loads of their friends had walked out of it because it was so shit. And I looked up it up on I looked up on the Way Cinema.
Yes.
And it had one of the lowest ever audience approval ratings in America.
So is it uncomfortable watching for Americans? Is that...
Well, the film was called Mother! Exclamation mark. We don't pronounce exclamation mark.
Mother!
It's just Mother! Or Mother!
What do you, how, is that how you say it at the box office?
Can I have a film for Mother? It'd be great if you shout it into their face.
A friend of mine was queuing up in the cinema in New York once, and the guy in front of him said, "I'd like a ticket for Marlon Rauger." I'm sorry, Marlon Rauger. And the box office person didn't know what he was talking about, and my friend, who's very English, just leant forward and just goes, "I think the gentleman means Moulin Rouge." He's going, "Yeah, that shit."
Quite a good film.
Yeah, not bad.
Anyway, I wonder if the exclamation mark's just there so they can tell in reviews, they can look it up and see what's happening.
Yeah, it's true. You need a unique search term these days as a title.
Anyway, I'll tell you what happens in the film. So basically, it's written and directed by Darren Aronofsky.
Okay, of Black Swan.
Famous for Black Swan. He's also directed Pi as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Requiem for a Dream.
I still haven't seen Requiem for a Dream, which I'm told is the best one. I enjoyed Pi.
I thought Pi was all right. I really disliked Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, really?
And Black Swan, I only got through half of it, and my DVD was scratched, and I couldn't bother to watch it.
Black Swan, for me, felt like a pretty trad sports movie dressed up as an art house film that people thought was amazing, and it really wasn't. It was very skin deep.
Mm. You should have had a question mark after that.
Black Swan?
Black Swan? That'd be quite good if that was his little... thing to
punctuation
have,
after it.
A semicolon.
Mother colon.
Wow, the mother colon. I saw a dog shit on the road, literally. I thought that must be human, it was so big. I reckon that came from the mother colon.
Eight Marics.
anyway, so here we go. Mother, what happens in it? Well, Jennifer Lawrence is in a house, a strange octagonal house. And she is married to Javier Bardem, who is a frustrated writer who is unable to write. She has just redecorated the house after it was burnt down in a fire.
Right.
Then, out of nowhere, Ed Harris, who's called Man, arrives, and he just starts to stay in the house. And then Michelle Pfeiffer, his wife, arrives, and she's... starts to sort of find herself in the house. Then everything goes slightly mental and more and more mental and more and more mental.
Okay.
I suppose
psychological horror, right?
It's not really a horror. People who've I read about it and I thought, well, this must be, it is, it feels like it's a film that has two halves. It starts off with weird psychological horror, then turns into some sort of metaphor for something, and whether she or the house is, people are saying, is Mother Earth.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And that
said,
is a metaphor for...
So she is Earth, and is man coming and destroying?
I think it's something along those lines.
Right, okay.
Anyway, how would I describe this? It's the... I think the closest, best way to describe it is to say, imagine a friend, a boring friend. So, not a friend, a work colleague. You're at work... in the office, and then there's someone who comes in, and they always tell you their dreams.
Yeah.
They come in, they tell you a bad dream that makes no sense at all. It's not interesting. It is has totally pointless, has no sort of rules or structure to it, and is a big pile of bullshit.
Right. Okay.
I like this film. Absolutely awful.
Really?
And it's so frustrating because Jennifer Lawrence is shot, it reminded me of Blue is the Warmest Colour, the way it's shot, because it's basically really in Jennifer Lawrence's face.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Jennifer Lawrence.
And her face.
She's a very beautiful person, but she can't really sustain it. And it's so frustrating, for she's a normal person and everyone else in the film is mental and ignores her. I was trying to work out a way to describe it. So Marek's version of how a rough summation of dialogue in the film. So Jennifer Lawrence says, to Javier Bardem, "Oh, could I have some milk?" And Javier Bardem replies, "Sausages, just gonna get you some sausages for you." And then Jennifer Lawrence would say, "Oh, no, milk, please." And Javier Bardem would say, "Oh, okay, yeah, fine, I heard you. I'm just gonna get those sausages for you." That's literally what it's like. So if someone's saying something,
but it's like gaslighting. Then
what's a gaslighting mean?
Gaslighting is when you purposefully toy with someone in order to make them think they're going mad.
It's not like that. I think the milk and sausages. It's that frustrating. Basically, asking someone to me, and all the other characters are ignoring her to the point you just think, do you know what? Just piss off. Just leave the house. And it's very claustrophobic because it's all in one house. I mean, if Darren Aronofsky's aim was to make a really claustrophobic film that makes you feel sort of annoyed and slightly ill at ease, he's been successful in that. But it's so frustrating. It just doesn't make sense, because you think, oh, it's going to be one thing, it's a horror and she's almost living her life some sort of dream, or she's not really alive, or she's been you know, it's the afterlife. She was spending a lot of the first half of it working out, oh, is this it, what is the mystery here, what is a twist that's suddenly going to unlock this and make it interesting. But there isn't really that thing.
It turns out.
I think it starts off about that, then turns into something else. And I don't know why people have hailed this as the film of the year. It is beyond me. It's got 5-star reviews and 4-star reviews from people, but I thought it was. And I'm a big fan of art house films. You know, I like films that try and do something different.
Have you in the past been a fan of films that don't follow sort of more traditional linear narratives and sort of like more dreamlike ones where logic breaks and things?
Yeah, I mean, I know I slagged off it for saying it didn't follow some logic, but
did you enjoy Mulholland Drive, for instance?
Yes, right. I love that. Yeah,
and that's you know.
Yeah, I don't mind all that stuff, but this is just. I was watching and thinking, is it enjoyable? If I take away this whole thing and I don't know what the mystery is, are any of the themes enjoyable or fun to watch, or you know, or have some, or have me held sort of captive in any way as a viewer? No. I mean, it's an utter flop. I give it 2 Mareks.
Oh, wow.
I think Darren Aronofsky is up his own arse. I heard that I went back and I read about it, that apparently he wrote it in a sort of 5 days in a feverish state. He wrote it. So it's almost like someone who has written, who's had a dream, they've written it down, and no one has said, look, Darren, no one really likes it when people tell other people about their dreams, because it's always out of context, and it was during the middle of the night, and you're probably a bit ill. So just write that down on a bit of paper and throw that away, and then write something that someone can empathise
with. Does it feel like you're in the throes of a fever dream?
It's just that.
Is it an anxiety dream? Is that what it's sort of meant to be?
Yeah, it does feel a bit. So, you know, so when you're trying to run and you're running really slowly, that when you've got your French exam tomorrow and you haven't studied French for a year, when the phone's ringing and you can't answer the phone, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's like an anxiety. That's a good description, an anxiety dream. And who would want to go to the cinema and watch that?
I mean, reality is an anxiety dream at the moment. I mean, you go to the cinema to get away from anxiety, don't you?
Yeah, I thought it was terrible. And I'd really like to hear if anyone thought it was good as well. I just think it makes me just doubt when reviewers, like Mark Kermode, gave it 4 stars. And I thought, what are you? Are you watching the same thing? Are you just so tuned out of any reality? You've watched so many films, you cannot. I know it's just so warped your sense of what is a good film.
Well, luckily, our sense of good film is still intact because we don't watch very many films, really.
Well, it was awful.
Okay. Well, if you've seen Mother. And you disagree or agree with Marek, why not get in touch and let us know? Go to filmfandango.com and you can get in touch with us.
I would
there.
Say I enjoyed the film I watched last week, which was
Don't You Care About the Morgans? No. did you hear what happened to the Morgans? You can't even remember what it's called. You're looking at me blankly. Don't know if I'm right or not.
It's what happened to the Morgans, isn't it?
No.
Or did you hear about the Morgans?
Did you hear about the Morgans?
I've never known
it. You tried to spring a trap on me, and you didn't even know if it was right or not.
I misremembered it. I can't believe I forgot. Did you hear about the Morgans? That is the most... And that also has...
Yeah.
A question mark. It has a question mark in it.
Punctuation in the title.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So this could be our new rule.
Yeah.
If it's... So...
Oliver Twist has an exclamation mark.
That's quite good though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Films with blue in them.
Non-musicals that have punctuation in it.
Are terrible.
Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah.
That's another one.
I better not put a... exclamation mark or a question mark in Bumming Man then.
The Bumming Man?
Bumming? Man.
The Bumming Man. That's quite good.
Well, that is quite good actually.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Did You Hear About the Morgans more...
No.
Yeah, more than Mother.
You enjoyed watching a twilight of their careers, Hugh Grant and Sarah Jessica Parker rom-com, more than you enjoyed watching Jennifer Lawrence in a film?
Yes.
Wow. All right, well, I'm not going to go see that now. I was going to.
Don't.
Okay, I won't.
Here's a letter from Kayla.
Hang on. I think it's time for this.
Oh.
Here's a letter from Caleb, who wants to talk about bullshit films. He says, "Dear Film Fandango, I am a middle-aged man who has had to endure several years of children films. I have been looking forward to my children getting to an age where they can enjoy more complex and imaginative films. My son, aged 12, selected Guy Ritchie's King Arthur from the DVD store. I know, DVD store, I am poor. It is cheaper than subscribing in New Zealand. Now, I am no highbrow critic and do not mind the odd bit of bullshit. I grew up enjoying Krull, Hawk the Slayer, another such fantasy crap. Total crap, but the films had a charm about them, and I went away drawing fantasy characters and building Lego worlds as a result. Guy Ritchie's Cockney Geezer King Arthur is a soulless mess of a film. Utter bollocks from start to finish. I was not expecting anything special, but what were they thinking? The lead actor... Charlie Hunnam's King Arthur is unlikable, charmless, and for some reason a sort of Marvel superhero. The villain of the piece, Jude Law, is about as charismatic as a used teabag in a bin who turns into a supervillain straight out of Avengers. Why does he have a career? Aidan Gillen tries to reprise his Game of Thrones role without the wit or intellect. Neil Maskell geezers it up as Arthur's China plate. And there are pointless jujitsu ninja men who practice fighting all film and get their asses kicked at the first time they have a fight until Arthur goes into hyper mode, his awakening moment. The plot is a mess, and even a 12-year-old idiot boy thought it was totally dog shit. So here are my questions. How do such bullshit films get released when even a 12-year-old can see it is total and utter crap? Do they not preview them to humans? Is the industry made up of a load of yes men and women who will employ the twat Ritchie again? What a missed opportunity. This could have been excellent, but is just awful. Clash of the Titans, the new shit one, and a Marvel superhero, pick the worst one you can think of, Love Child, without the intellect of either. Never ever waste your eye juice on it. Watch Excalibur instead, cleverer, sexier, and just better." Thank you. That's from Caleb. Well, yes, it's come. I've noticed this King Arthur's come on streaming services recently. I only momentarily even contemplated watching it. Guy Ritchie, for me, he's a director with some style but very little taste, as far as I can tell. I think Lock, Stock and Snatch are both very well-directed films, whatever you think of the content. And actually, I enjoyed the first of the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmeses as well. Again, not a fantastic film, but certainly adeptly made. But Jude Law actually tends to be a bit of, I won't bother with this. For me, and that may be unfair, but
he's in a lot of Guy Ritchie films. He's a sort of talisman of.
Is he?
Isn't he quite a lot of his stuff?
Oh, he's in Sherlock Holmes, but I can't think of him being in the others.
Well, there we go. There's two. Jude Law. It's his voice.
Yeah.
I don't think he's ever been good in anything. He's just surviving on being good looking.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's good enough. You know, in The Talented Mr. Ripley, he works because he's basically playing himself.
Yeah.
But I've not really ever got the Jude Law thing. He feels to me like he should have been consigned to the 90s. But yeah, I won't see King Arthur. Not a chance.
That's one with David Beckham in it as well, I think. Yeah, I've got no... I really hate all these laddie sort of fight... Welcome to the Punch, one of my worst... That sort of genre films. And this is sort of trying to make that sort of gangster thing into King Arthur. Poor King Arthur.
All he wanted was to be remembered as the best king ever.
And now this is coming on the main like a right dickhead.
Caleb brings up Excalibur. Have you seen it?
A long time ago.
Incredible film. Absolutely incredible. I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember it being a favourite. Like, it's... but I was into all of that stuff. I remember watching the Sam Neill Merlin series as well.
Oh,
I'm really enjoying that. So they blend in my mind a bit. But no, Excalibur, it's got Helen Mirren as Morgana. And let's have a look. I'm just trying to remember... Gabriel Byrne is one of them. Liam Neeson is Gawain in it.
What's the IMDb rating on it?
7.4.
It's good.
I remember there's an incredible bit where a guy pulls... He's having a fevered dream, anxiety dream, and he wakes up and he's put his own sword through his leg. But he's naked, having had sex. I think it's Sir Lancelot. And he pulls the sword out of his leg. And I remember as a kid not knowing how the hell they did that. It's like, you know when you're actually dazzled by special effects, but something that simple. It's like, wow! But no, well worth revisiting, I think.
That's the last
Patrick
time
Stewart's
you,
in it as well.
You went to bed with a sword.
That never again.
That's a good way to put your children off trying to sleep with weapons.
Yeah. Make them watch a film that is far too old for them and they won't quite understand and will feel weird around the sexual bits. It's John Borman. Who did Deliverance? He produced it. Hang on a second. Is that correct? I'm trying to remember what John Borman did. He did do Deliverance, I'm right. And Zardoz, which I still haven't seen.
Oh, that's the Sean Connery one,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, the famous weird sci-fi girdle.
Yeah. Well, here's a letter.
All right.
This is from John Jordan. Hi Matt, David and Buddy, love your work, etc, 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 etc. Try and say etc, etc fast.
Etc, etc, etc.
Okay, you can do it. I'll get to the point, as I can't think of anything witty or Chris Webb related to say. Two unrelated questions. One, where do you draw the line at separating the person from the performance stroke product? My wife won't watch anything by Woody Allen. I feel uncomfortable watching anything with Mike Tyson in, but have no problem watching OJ and Naked Gun. I believe it's a personal choice with no right or wrong answer. That's a good question.
A very good question.
Well, should we answer that question first and go on to the second question?
Sure. How do you feel about separating the person from the art?
Well, I've not really been a big fan of Woody Allen anyway.
Well, so you've got no problem there, but you do love The Cosby Show.
Oh, The Cosby Show. It does completely change. I mean, that's one example where it totally changed everything in The Cosby Show.
Yeah.
It's really hard to watch it.
But because he paints himself as such a sort of paragon of family values, that's why.
Oddly, I feel OJ and the Naked Gun is so stupid, and it happened before all the murders. It doesn't really feel.
Like
doesn't really feel that.
But and it is like murdering. However, you know, obviously wrong. Murdering somebody in a fit of domestic passion, you know, in terms of it's not like he's a systematic paedophile or anything, it's like it's a horrific single act, you know, but I don't know, it's different somehow. What about Roman Polanski?
This is getting in the whole the really murky area of paedophilia.
Well,
which
yeah.
is when is it different? Because he slept with a girl he thought was 16. She was 15.
Is that right? Was she not 13?
I thought she was 15.
Well, we are grossly uninformed on these issues.
Well, I mean, anyone... I think it's weird, people who rock stars, you start banging people who are literally 40 years their juniors.
Mm.
And if you hear kids talking on the, I've been travelling quite a lot recently, I've been on the trains and heard teenagers talking. Even like the people who they're 20-year-olds, they sound literally like children. Oh, she was 13.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
Yeah, I always thought she was 15. For me, that's makes it a lot worse.
Yeah, I mean, but the question was, you know,
would you still does watch that his
affect
films?
You when you watch their?
No, because stuff. Well, the thing is, Polanski being a director makes it different because he's not really.
He's not reminding you of his existence constantly.
Whereas Woody Allen, there's some sort of vanity about his films where he is always a central person in it.
And he's always seducing beautiful women, so it is slightly uncomfortable, possibly.
I've always found him uncomfortable, and I was not really surprised about...
Yeah, it was supposed to be comedic, though, wasn't it? The idea that he could get all of these women. But
yeah, but... Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike Tyson's just a psychopath, I think.
Yeah, and the... him being the comedy character in The Hangover, I did find a bit uncomfortable.
It's a very difficult. I think it's just subjective, isn't it? Really,
exactly. But I would say if you do feel utterly uncomfortable watching these people's stuff anymore, that's fine. That is entirely fine. You know.
Yeah, but I think if they're not on the screen, so if Woody Allen was not on the screen, I wouldn't feel as bad about it. But I've never been a fan of his stuff anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And his second question, great comedic performances are very rarely acknowledged or honoured. Which performances would you have liked to see nominated? It's a very good question, John. Which comedy performances
would you like to see nominated for what, Oscars? This isn't quite related, but it was the Emmys 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? And Louis Anderson, who is a stand-up comedian who portrays Zach Galifianakis's mum in the TV show Baskets, is one of the most incredible performances I have seen in the last 10 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he didn't win. They gave it to Alec Baldwin for playing Trump, which is just, you know, a sketch show performance. But if you haven't watched it, watch Baskets and have a look at Louis Anderson, because he's absolutely brilliant. It's you totally forget you're watching a bloke, like, it's incredible. But in terms of movies,
I think John Candy in Planes, Trains and Automobiles is brilliant. Do you get anything for that?
I don't know.
Steve Martin, I think, is always incredible in all his films. I don't know, I think he ever got nominated for Oscars or any of that. Just it's really odd though.
Oh, Peter Sellers for some of the Pink Panther films, really, just in terms of his ability and craft in both physical and...
Did he get nominated for Doctor Strangelove? Because that is
yes, I believe he did.
One of the greatest ever comedic performances.
Yeah,
I'm looking it up now as we talk. Nominated for 3 Oscars. Yes, he was nominated for that, and he was nominated for in Being There, which is not necessarily a comedy film. John C. Reilly is someone who I think is a brilliant actor.
Yes,
in all of his comedy roles, and he should have been I think the best supporting actor in quite a few. Step Brothers, something like that.
Step Brothers, genuinely, I would give awards to. I think the on-screen chemistry between the two of them, and just they hit every single gag so well. Like, it's one of the best comedies ever made, I think.
Yeah. And I don't know if Jim Carrey got nominated for The Truman Show.
He might have done, but it's because he's straying into drama that he starts to become award-worthy.
He got the Golden Globe for that, but he didn't get nominated.
What about Eternal Sunshine? Oscar.
And for that, he got nominated for an Oscar, the Golden Globe.
Right. Yeah, I think it's very hard for comedians to get nominated for their comedic performances. They've got to serious up before they're allowed.
It's really odd. I don't understand this, why it's frowned upon when it's a lot more difficult then you know, what are some serious actors who don't actually move their faces at all?
Well, I think the mistake, and it's often made by people in this country as well, is to mistake taking something serious with being solemn about something. You can take your craft very seriously while still having a sense of humour, whereas the performance of "I am taking this seriously" means you immediately go to solemnity with no sense of humour whatsoever. And it's just a human thing, isn't it? It's annoying.
Here's another one.
Here's a letter. This is from Francis Jolly about Film Chat. It says, "Hello again, hope you're well. I watched It recently and really enjoyed the remake. They actually spent time developing the characters and it stayed away from the usual quiet, quiet bang scares one can expect from modern horror. My question is, has a horror film ever made you cry? Wouldn't it be interesting if you can actually welled up when your favourite character was bludgeoned to death in the final scene? American Made and Detroit are worth a watch. The latter will surely be up for an Oscar or two for its cast. Goodbye, boys. Fran Jolly." Has a horror film ever made you cry?
I think American Werewolf in London, the final scene, very upsetting.
It's quite sad, isn't it? But it does veer away from the horror genre at the end, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if you'd count A Monster Calls as horror or not.
No.
But it certainly evokes the horror tropes.
Yeah.
You know, in the early days, the monster is terrorising the boy in some regard.
I think Carrie made me feel quite sad. I haven't seen it for such a long time.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that again, see if I stop. As I get older, I cry more, I think. So I get to a point when I'm in my 80s, I just cry as soon as I put the TV on.
Constantly.
Well, it'll be holograms, but then when it'll be holograms or something injected straight into my mind, instantly sitting in a wheelchair just crying while films are injected into my mind.
And you experience them from all perspectives and all angles instantaneously.
Oh, horrible.
Yeah. You just suddenly understand a string of events instantly.
Yeah, there's no time.
It's just boom.
And they supplant all my memories, so I can't tell.
So when you binge watch a TV show, it literally is just a larger syringe. Yeah! Oh, that was the best.
Anyway, we're getting quite short on letters.
Yeah, so if you'd like to write to us, then go to filmfandango.com and fill out the form there. We'll get your letter and read it out in the programme. Just ask us a question or share a film you've seen recently. If you've watched something on a whim or you've got an old favourite, then share it with us and we'll share it with everybody else. Filmfandango.com is the place to go. Now, I've seen a film as well, Merrick.
Oh, hello.
Hello there. I've seen a film on Netflix. Now, I browsing around the place, you know. This is down as a Netflix original, which means Netflix will have bought it. This is a film by Eli Craig, who you may recognise the name of because he is the director and writer of Tucker and Dale vs. Evil that we talked about before. It's a very good film. It's a comedy sort of piss take of the Cabin in the Woods slasher genre. Now, this one is his new one called Little Evil. And it stars Evangeline Lilly and Adam Scott, Sally Field and Clancy Brown. I bloody love Clancy Brown. It's great in everything. Yeah. This is basically the Omen piss take. So it's a comedy version where what would it be like to be the stepfather of Damien from The Omen, basically.
Okay.
So he's taken a well-known horror, not genre, but trope, and added basically rom-com into it. So all of the elements are there for this to be good. I mean, I think Adam Scott's good.
Stand him.
Can you not? What have you seen him in?
Every time I see him, he really gives me the creeps.
Really?
I find him really unlikable. And, yeah, Mitty, I've seen him
he's in Step Brothers.
Yeah, I've seen him in a few things, and I really dislike him for no apparent reason.
Wow. Well, you probably wouldn't enjoy this, then. Basically, it makes a real layman's error, I'm afraid, early on, in that it does that thing, and it seems to me like it's a decision from the edit suite of panicking and changing what you had planned. But it starts with sort of pre-titles with an exciting scene from about two-thirds of the way through. And so you kind of, it's supposed to whet your appetite, and then you go through the film and you get back to that point, now understanding what it all meant, and then the film concludes and carries on. So it starts with him being dug up as he's been buried alive by his stepson, and he says, "I want a divorce," and, you know, there's thunder and lightning and blah, 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 and then it cuts to titles, and then we cut back to, you know, whatever, 2 months earlier or whatever. But then the first third to a half of the film is him wondering whether her son is actually evil or whether he's just, you know, a kid who needs a father figure and he needs to try and understand him and blah, blah, blah. But we all know he's tried to bury him alive.
So the whole thing is redundant.
It's just boring. For the first half of the film, it's just tedious. And there's a lot of comedy performances that are just a bit charmless. There's an actress called Bridget Everett who is playing a man, or certainly everyone refers to her as a man. And she's trying to do that Melissa McCarthy thing of being really in your face, sort of overly familiar, slobbing around, kind of fast talking, drinking, and she just, to me, just isn't very likeable. And Adam Scott, again, is not quite likeable enough to carry this either.
What about Sally Field and Clancy Brown?
I mean, as always, brilliant, you know, really good, but their parts are relatively small in this. Clancy Brown plays a preacher who's buying up a disused nunnery, and Sally Field is someone from Child Services. It's got a couple of faces you'll recognise from American comedy shows as well, playing the best friends. So one of them is Turk from Scrubs. Another one is in... You know. But it all feels a bit like made for TV. It does cheer up in the final third when it actually sort of finds itself and drives forward a bit and does things you weren't expecting. But for the first half of this film, it's all a bit... he's not sure if the kid's really evil or whether it's just coincidences that the clown set on fire, and that maybe he's just being a bad stepdad and he should step up to that. And
is the kid good?
The kid's basically... kid's fine. I
just
mean,
a parody.
They've just made him be silent and stare at things, you know, like doing the sort of evil eyebrows.
The Omen.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's nowhere near as... charming, or it is, or is in any way unique like Tucker and Dale versus Evil is. In fact, it doesn't quite.
Is it as good as that one about the Morgans?
What's it called? No More Mr. Morgan.
No, can you remember it?
did you hear about the Morgans?
Yes,
I've started to remember it now. Why are you putting that in my head? It's useless knowledge. Basically. It feels like there's a disconnect between the writer, director, and the actors until the guy who played Dale in Tucker and Dale versus Evil shows up for a cameo, and it suddenly sort of ratchets up a notch. So it starts to make sense a bit more, and you go, "Oh, am I maybe enjoying this?" But it's got such a glacial pace up to that point. It's a real shame because I was really looking forward to.
So was it comedy then?
Yeah, yeah. It's a parody of horror, basically, but in the same way Tucker and Dale was, you know.
It's got pretty average reviews.
The thing Tucker and Dale was and had in spades was charming. Like,
it's because the two leads were really good, weren't
absolutely,
they?
Absolutely, that's it.
Alan Tudyk, wasn't it?
It's Alan Tudyk, and is his name Tyler Labine? He plays Dale. And the two of them together were absolutely fantastic, and you just spent time watching them and watched them muddle through everything. This feels too much like it's copying from sitcom, and so it just ends up being very sort of light and floaty and a bit meandering and slightly dull.
What a shit.
No, it's a shame. It's a mediocre film. It's not a bad one, it's a mediocre one.
I worry that Netflix... now, because I've seen a few of these Netflix originals, and they've pretty much been rubbish.
Well, we've talked about the Netflix originals brand being them offering people money to just put the Netflix logo over the top of their poster and to have exclusivity to distribution. So actually what it is people go to Netflix when they worry this film won't make any money in the cinema. So actually Netflix are getting cinemas sloppy seconds in a
When I go on Netflix, I automatically, if I see that Netflix sign above them, I avoid them.
Really? They're not all bad though, because
well, the classic example, which is amazing, which I don't think I've reviewed on here, but I've seen, is Beast of No Nation.
No, you haven't talked about that.
So that is the Idris Elba film about the war in the sort of civil war in the Congo. I can't remember, in North Liberia, sorry. Well, Sierra Leone, or I don't even know where it is, somewhere. But it's about sort of children being forced to fight for these sort of factions of just in the civil war.
Right.
And it's very graphic. It's sort of platoon-esque, but we're really sort of visceral.
And it's good.
Yeah, it's great.
We could discuss it next week, in fact, if you...
Well, at some point, but I think you should... Well, that's one that is...
Well, I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, equally, I thought was excellent. But quite rightly, wouldn't have done well in the cinema because it's a bit odd. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. So, you know, they can get good ones, but also sometimes it's famous faces, but a slightly duff film is also what they buy.
But we would have never heard of these films before because they would have been straight to video.
Yeah.
As only when you were about 12 or 13, when you had to, there's only one good film released every month, you end up watching these shit films at your Blockbuster or your local spa.
Yeah. Well, I'd probably give Little Evil 5.
I'm not going to watch it, man.
Like, I thoroughly enjoyed the end, and it started to get interesting around the middle when, well, spoilers, but when he's deciding whether or not he should murder his own son. He's just going, this is no longer normal rom-com. That's good. But the first half is just, they didn't need it. Didn't need any of it.
Been it.
Well, that's it for us, I think, this week. As I've already said many times this episode, but may as well say it again, if you'd like to write to us, go to filmfandango.com. Also, we do all of this for free, so if you'd like to donate towards our running costs, again, go to filmfandango.com and click the donate button. And everyone who has, thank you very much. Thank you. We'll be back next week with yet more films, but in the meantime,
keep watching the films.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinis.
I'm Kayla Itzinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.